So today's a very important day, the appearance of Shri Balaram. It's a big topic. It's a great topic. I mean, there's no one more vast than Balaram. We're going to try to chant this song, unless there's some really good singer here. Otherwise, you'll have to suffer through my rendition. Okay. This is, as you know, there's no difference between Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Balaram. And this is a song by Narottam Das Thakur, which he identifies a very significant element about about the Lord who appears as Sri Balaram. Okay. Goranga bolite habe pulaka sharira. Te habe pulaka sharira. Hari hari bolite nayane babeni. Bolite nayane babeni. Ar kabeni tai chande karuna hoibe. Sangsara basana mora kabe tu chabe. Vishaya chariya kabe shudabe mana. Kabe ama herabo Shri Vrindavan. Rupa Raghunatha pade aboy be akuti. Rupa Raghunatha pade hoy be akuti. Kabe hama bujabo se jugala piriti. Rupa Raghunatha pade rahu mora asha. Prarthana koroye sada Narottamo das. Goranga bolite habe pulaka sharira. Hari hari bolite nayane babinir. Nani babini ara kabe nitai chande karuna hoibe. Karuna hoibe ar kabe nitai chande karuna hoibe. Tang sara basana mora kabe tuchabe. All right, Krishna. Well, I just wanted to explain. I've sort of focused on this one verse out of this song, which I thought was appropriate. Ara kabe nitai chander karuna hoibe. Sangsara bhasana mora kabe tucha habe. It's the translation, when will that day come when Lord Nityananda's causeless mercy is bestowed upon me so that my desire for material enjoyment becomes very insignificant. Tucha habe. When will it become insignificant? So, Prabhupada comments on this. He says, we are all asking about the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Nityananda is supposed to be, originally, he says, the original spiritual master. So we have to approach Gauranga, Lord Chaitanya, through the mercy of Lord Nityananda. What is the symptom of a person who has achieved the causeless mercy of Lord Nityananda? Narottam Das Thakur says that the symptom of one who has actually received the causeless mercy of Lord Nityananda is that he has no more material desire. So that's the acid test. Sangsara vasana means desire for material enjoyment. And Narottam Das wonders, when will it become very insignificant? Of course, as long as we have bodies, we have to accept so many material things, but not in the spirit of enjoyment, but only to keep body and soul together. So, this is a very significant line about when will that become insignificant, since all of us have been struggling, some for many years, some for just a few. When we first joined, I remember after about 3 or 4 months, I thought, wow, I'm really doing well. I'll soon be liberated. In one sense, we were liberated. We were performing liberated activities, but, well, just one other story, just for, you know, to lighten things up a little. A devotee whose name I won't mention, and my godbrother, Dayananda Prabhu, they were, in the early days of spiritual sky incense, they were packing incense together, and this devotee turned to Dayananda and said, you know, that lecture that Prabhupada gave this morning about the three different levels of realization, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, Dhyanan said, yeah. He said, I think I'm at number two. So we had high hopes. We still have high hopes, but this is a process. Sometimes it takes a little time. So in talking about Lord Nityananda, Lord Balaram, just as in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a link, the Adi Leela is quite lengthy, and it explains in great detail all the background of who's who and all the different tattvas, Guru Tattva, Krishna Tattva, all the different tattvas are explained in detail so that we have a strong foundation of understanding when we hear about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram, or we hear about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, we don't have some whimsical, sentimental attitude, but we understand these things in depth. Just as Radhanath Maharaj was explaining, I heard recently, about how we worship in the mood of awe and reverence. There are so many rules in deity worship, and we worship and we very painstakingly follow these rules so that we don't take things cheaply. But internally, we want to try to relish these pastimes of Krishna and Balaram. So recently, in preparation for this class mainly, I've been reading a Krishna book, which is this wonderful book that was published in 1970 with the help of George Harrison. And the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram are told in such a wonderful way. Sometimes people say, oh, it's too bad Prabhupada didn't finish his commentary in the 10th canto. Well, actually, it's right here. This is his commentary. It's a combination of lila, translation of verses, and commentary all in one. And it's wonderful. If you haven't read it lately, I highly recommend it. Of course, I highly recommend any of Prabhupada's books, but this one has really struck me again. We used to read it every day. It was part of the regular sadhana to read Krishna book. And when I worked in the Gurukul, as the kids were going to sleep at night, we used to read the Krishna book until everybody fell asleep. And it really makes an imprint on you. If we talk about becoming Krishna conscious, but yeah, this is one way to do it, very nice way to do it. This book is such a wonderful book. Anyway, now I'm going to give a little technical background so that the pastimes, we remember who it is that's having these wonderful pastimes. Sometimes when you hear a kind of formal description of a person's character, almost in the mood of awe and reverence, you start to think, wow, they're just so exalted. How can I understand anything about such a personality? But then when you actually hear the pastimes and you say, oh, he's getting angry, like Balaram gets angry. Balaram has a bizarre sense of humor sometimes. Or when we examine the pastimes of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, we see that some very extraordinary things take place. And we become very attracted then. First, we have this awe and reverence background, but then when we hear there about their actual pastimes, we think, well, they're almost human. They're not human, but they have a human-like quality that makes them especially attractive. Anyway, Nityananda, or Balaram, means Prakash, Swayam Prakash. That is to say that Balaram presents Krishna. This is Prabhupada's words. He says, therefore, Balaram is Guru Tattva. Guru is representative of Balaram. He's exhibiting Krishna. He's presenting Krishna, Prakash. So, what does it mean to say that Balaram is presenting Krishna? Any takers? He's presenting Krishna. Wow, nobody's got their hand up. No, not puffing him up. No, no. Well, he's presenting Krishna, exhibiting Krishna in the sense that Krishna expands Lord Balaram, his first expansion, and then Balaram expands the whole rest of the divinity. In other words, all the expansions, all the avatars, they're all coming through the agency of Sankarsana or Balaram. So in that sense, he's certainly presenting Krishna. But another meaning of Prakash is that he illuminates. When you read Krishna's pastimes, you realize that Balaram is, he is occasionally very prominent in those pastimes, but mostly he sort of stays in the background admiring Krishna. And in a wonderful way, because he is actually considering himself, even though he's the elder brother, he has a lot of, he serves Krishna. He's always trying to serve him in some way. So we call him Prakash. He's illumination. He illuminates the pastimes of Krishna by presenting Krishna in all his different aspects. And the other way is he shines a spotlight on him in terms of his pastimes. It's almost like Krishna performs some heroic and amazing feat and Balaram's on the side just kind of going, look at this, laughing, for instance, when Kali's serpent had Krishna in his meshes, and our residents were, going mad with fear and lamentation, and Balaram was laughing. Now, why was he laughing? Was he laughing at the... Well, he was laughing at the very idea that Krishna was in any danger. He wasn't laughing at the residents, but he was laughing at this idea that Krishna was in danger. So this is Krishna, this is Lord Balaram. He's exhibiting. And what does he show? He's the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. He's the Servitor God. So what does he show? How to serve Krishna, how to serve Lord Chaitanya, how to do it. For instance, in Bengal, he delivered Jagai and Madai. So he showed. What did he show? He went out preaching with Haridas Thakur, door to door, taking all kinds of risks and humbly begging people to take up the spiritual life. So this is the merciful nature. There have to be varieties. In other words, the impersonalists are also trying to reach the absolute truth. But there have to be varieties to attract people. So when Lord Balaram and Krishna and exhibit their pastimes, they exhibit this amazing variety of pastimes with all elements of humor, laughter, dread. I mean, all of the different emotions are invoked by their activities. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is sometimes called Sevya Tattva, the person who is served. And there's three categories, Sevya, Seva, and Sevaka. So that means the person served, the process of service, and the servant. So as a guru, Nityananda's teaching how to worship Lord Chaitanya, and Balaram is teaching how to worship Krishna. In Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary, when he talks about the Panchatattva, for instance, he says, the supreme energetic, the personality of Godhead, manifests five different kinds of pastimes as the Panchatattva. He says the aim is the absolute truth, but the difference is they, meaning the impersonalists, do not accept varieties of taste. So why is there so much variety in the pastimes? Because that's where people become attracted, different kinds of tastes. So it says here, therefore they fall down. This is not our version, but it is stated in the Vedic literature, aruya kritschena parang padang tatha pantyant yadho nadrita yusmarangraya. By severe penance and austerities, they go up to the Brahman effulgence, but from there they fall down for want of varieties. You cannot live without varieties. So sometimes people question, why is there so many pastimes? Because people like variety. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. Sometimes Prabhupada used to say that. And also, Balaram is known for strength. Now, some people, you know, think of this strength as something physical, but of course it's not. Prabhupada kind of makes fun of that in this passage. He says, we see daily that a very strong man, very powerful man, very good brain, very good scientist. So where is the strength? The strength is Atma. As soon as the Atma or the soul goes out of this body, so intelligent, so strong, and so many things, that is nothing. That is the difference between a dead man and the living man. A living man is very powerful, very good position, everything. As soon as he lies down, he is lying down on the floor, and if you kick him on his face, he'll not protest. So where is that strength? The strength is gone. That is spiritual strength. On the spiritual strength, the body moves. Suppose you've got a very good car, Mercedes car or Rolls Royce car. But when there is no petrol, how the car will move? It is not possible. There is spirit, petrol spirit. Similarly, real strength is spiritual strength. The spiritual strength is Balaram. Bala means strength. Therefore, we have to take shelter of the lotus feet of Balaram, Guru Tattva. Balaram means Guru Tattva. Balaram represents Guru. If you want to understand Lord Chaitanya, if you want to understand Krishna, then we have to take shelter of Balaram. Without the mercy of Balaram, you cannot understand. He says you cannot realize your spiritual identification. So you'll not know who you are without the mercy of Lord Balaram. So we're getting the idea that Balaram's pretty important in our spiritual lives, hopefully. He adds to this, Prabhupada adds to this, if you're a good speaker, that does not mean you'll understand yourself, neither by good brain. Because you have got very good brain, you'll understand Krishna. No. Nayamatma pravachena labhyo namahedaya nabahuna shrutena. If you think you are a very good scholar, university degree holder, then you'll understand. No. No, this is not possible. Krishna is manifesting himself through Balaram. It means all the varieties of spiritual existence are manifested through the agency of Balaram. So that, therefore, we have to take as shelter. Now, this next section is that I'm going to read is this is from the introduction to a book called Nityananda Charitamrita, which was written by Vrindavan Das Thakur, who Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said is the Vyas of Chaitanya's pastimes. So if there is a Vyas for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, it's Vrindavan Das Thakur. So he says some interesting things. He says that Nityananda is the sum total of all gurus, Samasti Guru. He is Guru Tattva. All individual gurus, Vyasti, are representations of Nityananda. And then he quotes the author that put this book together. He quotes from the purport of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which it's a little, convoluted. Oh, not convoluted, that's not the right way. It's a little dense, it's a little hard to follow sometimes, but it's nice. He says, the guru is the embodiment of the manifestation of the divinity to the pure, receptive, spiritual essence of the disciple. So, in other words, on the spiritual level, the guru is manifesting God. Nityananda is the primary manifestive constituent of the divinity. So he's the Adi Guru, as we were hearing earlier. Nityananda alone possesses the distinctive function of the Guru. Nityananda is a servant God. He serves Gaurasundar by the distinctive method of reverential servitude. He is identical with Sri Balaram of Krishna Leela. And then he goes into the relationship. I'm going to summarize some of these things. He goes into the relationship of Krishna and Balaram, and he explains that he's very respectful, that Krishna is very respectful to Balaram. Balaram is very respectful to Krishna. In fact, he always gives deference to Krishna. It's like even though he's the older brother, the younger brother is so spectacular and so attractive. Even though Balaram, who are the two incarnations who exhibit the beauty? There's six opulences of the Absolute. Who are the two incarnations that exhibit the beauty, especially that beauty opulence? Do you know? No. Balaram and Vamana. They call him a dwarf, but he's not a dwarf. He's a perfectly small person. He's very beautiful. A dwarf is usually a bit distorted in appearance. Sometimes we say midget, but that doesn't sound very nice. But these two they exhibited the beauty of the Absolute. But still, Balaram's always deferring to Krishna. So it says, individual souls are under the direction of Nityananda. They receive their service at his hands. Nityananda is not a jiva, he is divinity. He is the ultimate source of the jiva. The jiva is a potency of Nityananda. No jiva can be the medium of the service of the Absolute to another jiva. So the absolute. So what he's saying here is the Absolute has to communicate through the guru, like the guru is functioning like a microphone. So just like my voice is amplified by the microphone, the guru, when he speaks, Nityananda speaks through him. Otherwise, it says it's not possible. Otherwise, he said, no jiva can be the medium of the service of the Absolute to another jiva. The Absolute alone may communicate his service to the separable constituents of himself. This is the real nature of the function of the guru. Now, here's another point that's interesting, I think, is that, you know, we often hear so much about how Radharani is the embodiment of devotion. Certainly true. And in one sense, she seems to function as the guru as well. But here's an explanation. He says, Nityananda does not directly instruct in the confidential service of Krishna. Srimati Radhika is the guru of the inner circle of the servants of Krishna. Srimati Radhika, however, accepts the offer of service of only those souls who are especially favored by Nityananda. So in other words, you have to get the mercy of Nityananda, and he has to recommend you to that service. If you're going to be trying to enter the service of Radharani, then you have to get Nityananda's okay. It's almost like he's, what do you call that when they, I guess you'd say screening the applicants. Just like Swarup Damodar, people used to come and want to read all this poetry to Lord Chaitanya, or come forth with their treatise and explain something, and Swarup Damodar would have to hear it first. And if he approved it, then he would let Lord Chaitanya hear it. Otherwise, so in a sense, Balaram has that function for us. If he recommends, then there's a chance. So it goes on quite a bit, because I'm going to skip that. I still want to get to the pastimes. My wife warned me this morning, don't go on and on about this technical stuff. But I can't help it. That's where I'm at. You know, I like the technical stuff. But I'll try to keep it. Besides, I've been told I can talk as long as I want. If anybody gets tired, we'll have what they call in America a seventh inning stretch, which means in when they play baseball, takes a long time, something like cricket, but a little shorter. And they stand up in the seventh inning, and everybody has a stretch. They play some music. So if I see you nodding off, which you might start doing any time now, I'll try to pick it up a little bit. Anyway, this is a little section from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it talks about one of the aspects of Lord Balaram. He says, on the Vaikuntha planet in every universe, there is an ocean of milk, and within that ocean is an island called Shwetadweep, where Lord Vishnu lives. Therefore, this chapter describes two Shwetadweeps, one in the abode of Krishna, and the other in the ocean of milk in every universe. The Shwetadweep in the abode of Krishna is identical with Vrindavan Dham, which is the place where Krishna appears himself to display his loving pastimes. In the Shwetadweep within every universe is a Sesha. As you know, this is one of the expansions of Lord Balaram, Sesha. And he serves Vishnu by assuming the form of his umbrella, slippers, couch, pillows, garments, residence also. Just imagine he actually supplies the residence of God. He is the residence. Sacred thread, throne. And then they have specific verses which clarifies these are the forms that he takes in the service of Krishna. Umbrella, slippers, bedding, pillow, garments, resting chair, which I guess could be a throne, residence, and sacred thread. So I know a sitting chair is different, actually. Throne is a separate one. So he is thus called Lord Sesha, for he has attained the ultimate end of servitude to Krishna. He takes many forms for the service of Krishna, and thus he serves the Lord. I I'm going to skip some of the stuff I was planning to read because it's going to take too long. Here's one. This is from the Krishna book. This is the Lord's declaration to Yogamaya. It says, my plenary expansion, Anantasesha, is within the womb of Devaki. On account of being forcibly attracted to the womb of Rohini, he will be known as Sankarsana and will be the source of all spiritual power, or Bala, by which one can attain the highest bliss of life, which is called Ramana. So Bala, strength, Ramana, the highest bliss. Therefore, the plenary portion, Ananta, will be known after his appearance either as Sankarsana or as Balaram. Ananta, or Sesha, is the source of the power which sustains all the planets in their different positions. Materially, this sustaining power is known as the law of gravitation, but actually it is a display of the potency of Sankarsana. So sometimes we talk about gravity. That's Balaram. Balaram is gravity in every sense. So, Balaram is the form of the Supreme Personality of God who supplies spiritual strength. He's the manifestation of the mercy of Krishna. So that's also the function of the Guru, to be a manifestation of the strength. And what is this strength? Again, Prabhupada makes a few comments about strength, spiritual strength. He says, strength, spiritual strength, is the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra and following the rules and regulations. Another section, he says, spiritually strong means to have good faith in Krishna and Guru. That is spiritual strength. Therefore, Baladev means Guru, spiritual strength. Nityananda Prabhu is the spiritual master, or a spiritual master is the replica. So the spiritual master here is called a replica of Nityananda. So when Nityananda Prabhu is pleased, then we become detached from material attraction. So we were earlier reading that translation to the song, Gauranga Bolite Abe. And he's asking, when is this attraction going to become insignificant? Tucha. Insignificant. Yeah, he says, when will Nityananda be pleased? Because when he's pleased, that's when it happens. So now, that's enough of the technical background. Now I want to tell some stories. It's 9:30 now. Is that right? 9:30. Does anybody need to stand up and stretch or anything? Okay. So, one of the first major incidents in Krishna and Balaram's pastimes starts with this demon that was residing in the Talavan forest, Dainukasura. Very envious sort of creature. There were some wonderful fruits in that forest. And the coward boys would have liked to have gone in there, but they were a little bit nervous about Dainuka. So they appealed to Krishna and Balaram to go to this forest. So they did. And, of course, Dainuka had many associates. They were all in the form of asses, which is kind of interesting, too. They took the form of an ass because they behaved like asses, with braying and acting foolishly. Now, actually, this demon, in the writings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he says about Dainuka, he says, this demon represents gross intellect, lack of pure knowledge and ignorance of the truth due to foolishness. And he writes a little more about him. He says, the loss of knowledge of one's spiritual identity, ignorance concerning the non-difference of the name of Krishna and Krishna, and ignorance of our relationship with Krishna constitute Dainukasura. So I'll just run that by you again. Loss of knowledge of your spiritual identity. Ignorance concerning the non-difference of Krishna and his name. And ignorance of our relationship with Krishna. Now this is a demon that is killed by Balaram. And he writes that the aspirant, that means us, the sadhaka, says they will have to drive out with their own efforts the troubles of those asuras whom Baladeva has killed. This is the mystery of Braja Bhajan. Dainukasura is the evil of carrying material conceptions, prejudices, and superstitions. Sometimes he's also identified with sectarianism. So hearing this pastime about Dainukasura and how Balaram dispatched him, they began hurling these various asses around and knocking down the trees in the Talavan forest. That hearing that pastime helps to remove those anartas from our hearts. So that was the beginning, Dainukasura. And that's a very important pastime in that sense, that this is something that, tends to cling to us for a long time. A kind of ignorance. Basically, he represents ignorance. And our ignorance is that we maintain the bodily conception in so many false ideas. Then I mentioned earlier in the incident of Kaliya, where Kaliya was contaminating the Jamuna. And so people were dropping, apparently dead, on the shores of the Jamuna due to the poisonous effects of the Kaliya serpent. So Krishna entered the Jamuna and began to get enmeshed in the coils of Kaliya and drawn down into the water, and all the residents started going mad with fear and trepidation. And then Balaram was standing on the shore just having a chuckle at their foolishness. And so Krishna, as we know, was triumphant. Then in the next Leela of Balaram, the killing of Pralamba, they were, you know the story, I'll just briefly, this boy entered the, apparently a boy entered the assembly of the coward boys, wanting to play in these games. They were practicing some kind of, they were doing some kind of dueling. And the losers had to carry the win, the, I mean, sorry to say, yes, the losers had to carry the winners on their backs. So, in the fight, Krishna's party won, Balaram's party lost, and Balaram was faced with having to carry this new cowherd boy on his back. They were wondering at the time, who is this person? But they thought, okay, we let him, there was somehow he was able to, yes. No, Balaram carried, what did I say? Oh, sorry, you're right, exactly. Sorry, you're right, yeah. So anyway, Balaram did win. Of course he did. And Pralamba was carrying him. So, but he carried him away from the assembly of the coward boys. And then he began to expand himself to this gigantic form. And he was dispatched by Balaram, much to the delight of the coward boys. So now that's another one. Now what does Pralamba represent? According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Balaram removes licentiousness. Licentiousness, anybody like to offer a definition? Licentious behavior. Hedonistic, yeah. Inappropriately sensual behavior, let's put it that way. So he removes licentiousness, desire for personal gain, worship, and honor, pratishta, in other words. Adoration, we used to call it pad in the old days. Profit, adoration, and distinction. Oh yeah, he's after pad. Which, you know, it's very not uncommon. People get very caught up with, you know, having the sort of prestige that will allow them to be glorified by others. So this is a real stumbling block on our paths in Krishna consciousness, this desire for gain, profit, adoration, worship, and distinction, honor. So these are the things that are removed by hearing this particular pastime. That's why actually we do need to, I mean, these are some of the reasons. Each demon that's killed by Krishna in Vrindavan or Balaram, they are representative of the anartas that we confront in our practice of Krishna consciousness. So by hearing these pastimes, we become purified just by hearing them. And hopefully these things will gradually diminish in our hearts. That's the process anyway. In the Govardhan pastime, Krishna was, as you know, was it the pinky of his, was it his left arm? Left arm, wasn't it? Left arm, holding up a mountain. And the coward men were thinking, well, Krishna needs a little bit of help here. So they were holding up their sticks, their herding sticks. And then this is described in Nectar Devotion. Krishna, as he was holding up the hill, he began to tremble slightly. And so everybody became a little alarmed. And Balaram started laughing. Now again, what is he laughing about? He was laughing because he noticed that Krishna was checking out the breasts of the gopis. I mean, that's maybe not a nice way to put it, but he was observing the beauty of the gopis, let's put it that way. And so he was laughing because the residents were thinking there was some danger. There was no danger. So this is Balaram, again, that he's always kind of exhibiting Krishna, like, or appreciating Krishna, remembering Krishna. He shows this example. At one point, there was I thought a really interesting story. They were having Krishna and Balaram are actually in the forest of Vrindavan having a rasa dance with the gopis, having a wonderful time, and this demon showed up. His name was Sankasura. I don't know if you remember this pastime. He was the demon who looked something like a conch shell. And he had this incredible jewel on his head. He was very puffed up. He thought that the gopis were very beautiful women, and he thought they should be with him. So he actually started somehow or other, by his mystic power, he started leading them away. And as he was leading them away, the gopis began to shout for help. Krishna, Balaram, save us. So off he went, leading these, and so the two brothers began running after him. They grabbed some logs off the ground, and they started chasing this Sankasura. And then he said, okay, I guess I'm in trouble, and he began to run away very quickly. But Krishna wouldn't let him go. He told Balaram, you stay here with the gopis. So he went after, he grabbed this demon, and he gave him a good pounding. Killed him, took the jewel, his beautiful jewel, and very formally presented it to Balaram, his elder brother. So this is sort of indicative of their relationship, that he would honor his elder brother like that. You know, this jewel, this should be for you. So it's kind of a sweet ending. Now comes the difficult part. Or you could say that kind of in some minds, in the minds of the Brijbasis, this is the tragic part, that Akrura comes to Vrindavan on the behest of Kamsa to ask them to come and take part in this festival where they will be, of course, challenged to wrestle these very powerful wrestlers. So he comes and he actually brings them, leaves Vrindavan, takes them both onto his chariot. And on the way they stop to take bath in the Jamuna. And while they're taking bath, Akura has this vision. And he sees that Balaram transformed into Sesha as the serpent couch of Lord Mahavishnu. He sees all this in the Jamuna. And at the same time, the brothers are on the chariot. So he becomes bewildered. So this is the vision of Akura. When they reach Mathura, there's a washerman. They find this washerman coming into the town. And he's got all this clothing, beautiful cloth with him. But he's actually a servant of Kansa. And he's so puffed up that he, when they ask him for some of the cloth, they ask nicely. They ask very nicely to please give us some of this beautiful cloth. And he said, oh, you're so impudent. You dare to ask for the clothing of the king. And he was giving them a whole mouthful. And, you know, if people who like the films, you know, where there's this kind of kinds of martial arts going on, well, in this case, Krishna did something that I haven't heard about any martial artist doing. Using the edge of his hand, he cut off the washerman's head. Then they took these clothes, and they met up with a devotee tailor. And this tailor made some very beautiful clothing for them, so that way they could enter the city looking pretty fabulous. Spectacular anyway, but with all this beautifully colorful clothing that had been expertly crafted by this tailor, they entered the city. The tailor got the benediction of Sarupya Mukti. Now, that was just for making some clothes, so we can imagine people who make the clothing of the Lord, they must be very fortunate. They must be very fortunate persons. But it says that Krishna granted him that as long as he would live, he would earn sufficient opulence to be able to enjoy sense gratification. It's an interesting benediction, isn't it? It says, by this incident, Krishna proved that those who are Krishna-conscious devotees will not be lacking material enjoyment of sense gratification. That sounds good to me. They will have sufficient opportunity for such things. Anyway, we've all experienced it, really. Krishna takes such nice care of us. Even in so-called emergencies, things always come out pretty well. We're saved again and again. It says that we won't be lacking this. It says they will have sufficient opportunity for such things, but after leaving this body, they will be allowed to enter the spiritual planets of Vaikuntha or Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, Lord Balaram Ki. So then as they proceeded through the city of Mathura, now this is a little bit like a Western. I don't know if any of you watched, of course, you're much younger, but in my day, we watched a lot of Westerns. And it was always like a lot of them would always have the similar theme that these, you know, these heroes would come into town and there'd be a lot of bad guys that they had to face down. And they would do it, you know, they would win. They would have a shootout. They'd be very grave and, you know, steely-eyed and steely-mouthed. And they would win. So this is a little bit like that. You know, Krishna and Balaram entering Mathura, first the washerman, then the devotee tailor. Then the next thing they heard about this fantastic bow, this giant bow that no one could string. And so the bow was being guarded by all these soldiers. So Krishna just walked up, strung and broke the bow, just kind of knocked aside these people guarding the bow. Krishna, if you really examine Krishna's pastimes, he's very impetuous. He often does things, and Balaram's kind of like, whoa, you know, kind of following behind, like, okay. He's very impetuous. He takes the lead. And Balaram lets him, because mostly, you know, Balaram is there like a support service almost, but Balaram is in himself, he's God. He's the most beautiful, he's amazing, but Krishna always has the lead. So he grabs the bow, breaks the bow, and then the bow is, there's several big pieces of the bow, because then all the soldiers that were guarding the bow, and then Kansa sent a whole army, something, I think he sent one Akshahini or some incredible number of soldiers. There was another big fight, and all of these people were wiped out. So what an entrance. Just imagine what we know what Kansa was feeling, because there's descriptions of both the Nectar Devotion and Krishna book. He was going through a whole like mental breakdown, you know, thinking maybe, at one point he was thinking, maybe I should go and surrender to Krishna and Balaram. Maybe I should, no, they're just insignificant coward boy. He was going back and forth like anything in his mind and didn't know what to do. So anyway, by this, all this news reached Kansa's ears. So the next thing was sent was this elephant. Kuvalyapita, the elephant, the massive elephant, ferocious, apparently bigger than an ordinary elephant from all the descriptions. And the elephant was trying his best to kill them. And Krishna just dispatched him fairly easily as well. I can't go into all the description because there's just not enough time, but he used very interesting tactics to kill Kuvalyapita. And after he was killed, Krishna tore out one of the tusks, Balaram tore out the other tusk, and then they entered the arena, this arena of Kansa, carrying these tusks over their shoulders. Now just imagine how, I mean, I hate to, and I'm trying to be flippant, but how cool is that? You know, marching into an arena with the king and this huge assembly. And all the persons from Vrindavan were there. So many people were there. And there's a whole description of how people saw Krishna in so many different ways. And this is their entrance. They're coming, they're like adolescents coming into this arena carrying these bloody tusks. You know, I mean, you just can't, it's hard to top this. So then, there was an announcement that they were going to fight with these very powerful wrestlers. I mean, these were like, I don't know if there's any equivalent today because this is a different age, but these persons were massive. Chanura and Mushtika. And so Balaram was, and of course the boys took a humble position. They said, well, actually, how can you expect little boys like us to fight with giant men like you? And they said, don't kid up, and I'm paraphrasing, don't kid us. We know what you've been up to. We know that what you've done in Vrindavan. And we know what you've done since you've been here. So don't try to create an illusion that you're not strong enough to fight with us. So in a way, they were pretty courageous, you know, to even think about fighting these boys. And some of the people in the crowd, though, they didn't realize, you know, how powerful Krishna and Balaram were. So they began shouting, this is unfair. This is against religious principles. So they were quite upset. You know, there was a whole cacophony of, you know, some were in favor of the match, some were saying, no, it shouldn't happen, this isn't right. So there was a whole controversy, a hubbub, as you would say. There was a hubbub in the assembly. So then it was decided that Balaram would fight with Mushtika and Krishna would fight with Chanura. So there was this tremendous fight. And, to cut a long story short, of course they were defeated, utterly defeated. Then Kansa stands up and makes this ridiculous announcement. Well, I say ridiculous. He was serious. And he said that, actually, kill their father and mother, kill Ugrasena, you know, kill everybody that, you know, is connected with these boys. So when Krishna heard that, he became irritated. He grabbed Kansa by the hair and dragged him down into the assembly and just, you know, beat him to death, basically. And then he dragged him all around the assembly. Now, this is a good touch. After he killed him, he dragged him all around, like kind of like exhibiting, see, he's dead, see? And so then, if that wasn't enough, then Kansa had these eight brothers who were, you know, pretty irritated that, distressed that their prominent brother had been dispatched. So then they attacked, and Krishna was, it was by fate, he was supposed to kill Kansa, the eighth child of, you know, the prediction. He had fulfilled the prediction. So when they attacked, he just stepped to the side and said to Balaram, go ahead. So then Balaram killed these eight brothers, one after the other. Then together they went and they released Vasudev and Devaki from prison. And they were reunited, and there was, you know, this wonderful scene, reuniting scene. Then, after that, it was considered that these boys had not been, they had been trained as cowherds. And they didn't know much. Kind of a strange idea, but they were playing as cowherd boys. They didn't know much. They needed to be educated. So they were sent to the ashram of Sandipani Muni for training, and they were trained in all these arts and sciences. Together, they went together. Then when they were finished with their training, Sandipani Muni made a request. He said that, well, you know, you're supposed to give some dakshin when, you know, you've been trained by the guru. You're supposed to give dakshin. And I have a request. They said, okay. What is it? He said, I want you to rescue my son from death. So initially, they were told that the son had been attacked by this demon called Panchajana. So they went to that demon. They defeated the demon, but then he said, I don't have him. Oh, he didn't have him anyway. He didn't have the son. The son was with Yamaraj. So then they went to Yamaraj, and they didn't request it. They just said, give us back our guru's son. And, of course, Yamaraj, yes, sir, he complied. So these are all pastimes they shared. Now, in the meantime, by killing Kangsa, Jarasandha's daughters, Asti and Prapti, were widowed. So Jarasandha was a very powerful king, the king of Magadha, or what is now Bihar, I believe. He was very upset. I mean, these are his daughters. Now they've become widowed by this whimsical coward boy. You know, what in the world is... And so he became very envious, very full of enmity towards these brothers. So he began a campaign against Krishna and Balaram. 17 times he attacked them. 17 times. Each time he was defeated and all of his armies were killed. So he wasn't doing very well against Jarasandha. And when he was defeated, I think it was the first time he was defeated, Balaram, using the ropes, the special mystic ropes of Varuna, bound him up with these mystic ropes and said, and ordinary ropes as well, two different kinds of ropes, mystic ropes and regular ropes. So that was Balaram's function, to bind the defeated person. So Jarasandha was not faring very well in his attempt to overwhelm Krishna Balaram with his powers. But then another king came into prominence. He was the king of the Yavanas. His name was... See, you need to read this book more. Kalyavana. He was a very powerful king. He thought, no one can defeat me. I have 30 million soldiers. Who can stand against me? So these two, Jarasandha, for the 18th time, Jarasandha and Kalyavana combined forces, and they attacked Mathura, or they were preparing to attack Mathura. So Krishna thought, this is going to be disturbing for the residents of Mathura. I mean, imagine, 30 million plus, I don't know how many Akshahinis are going to attack a city. He said, this might be disturbing for the residents. So he constructed Dwarka in the middle of the sea, and then he transferred all of the residents of Mathura to Dwarka by mystic power. And then Krishna comes out of the city and starts running away. And of course, he's called Renchur, the one who flees the battlefield. Now, why did he flee the battlefield? Was he actually afraid of all these combined might of these persons? No. He had some other business. Does anybody know what that other business is? In the back. Well, that's one thing. Yes? Yes, he led him to Muchikunda, and then there was something. Yes. See, she knows her Bhagavatam. Yeah, that was in his mind, because he'd already received this message from Rukmini that she needed rescuing. And also, knowing everything, he also knew about Muchikunda. So he liberated Muchikunda. But while the brothers are being chased, they also ascended this mountain. Anybody? The name of the mountain was the Pravarshana Mountain. The peak was up in the clouds. So they climbed up this mountain, Pravarshana, and Jarasandha and his forces surrounded the mountain, and they thought, okay, well, we don't know where they are. They're somewhere on this mountain. It may take a long time to find them. So I know what we'll do. So they set fire to the whole mountain so the fire would go up. And it was this tremendous amount of smoke, and the two brothers leapt from the top of this mountain, and describes they leapt 88 miles unseen. So they made their getaway, and Jarasandha assumed they were dead. So for some time he was under this impression that these brothers had been killed in the fire. So, shortly after this, Balaram was made the city father of Dwarka. It was kind of a position of honor. Like, of course, King Agrasena was the king, but Balaram was kind of like the protector of the city. And at that time, he married Revati, who is his eternal consort. He married Revati, the daughter of King Raivata, who ruled this province called the Anarta province. Now, when Rukmini was captured by Krishna, when she was kidnapped by Krishna, it's emptying out. So, when Rukmini was very upset that Krishna, because he had arranged a marriage, he wanted Shishupal and Rukmini to be together. So Rukmini was very, very upset about this. And so, after Krishna had taken Rukmini, put her on the chariot, and by the way, in Dallas, Prabhupada explained something that I didn't ever find.